You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Carol Millenar, and we're discussing Force Labs. Carol, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's discuss Force Labs. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and your role there?
Force Labs is a design company that creates games to solve real-world problems. And it's a small outfit, and it's sort of, it has, you know, it has grown and shrunken and grown and shrunken over time. And I am actually the owner, founder, and yeah, well, just principal designer, I guess.
So can you tell us, give us an example of one of the games so we understand that wonderful goal of the company?
Or an idea
for a game. It's, you know, it's something, yeah.
Well, what we do is, we design games to solve real-world problems with, and it goes from, you know, board games to interactive installations to video games and everything in between. So, for example, we've made a board game, video game hybrid for education to teach kids the principles of conflict mediation, to a big hopscotch lane in a mall, to helping a building company with their safety issue. And thinking, you know, thinking about how people work and come up in using play and game principles to sort of change those, change how people work and make them work safer.
So that's fascinating. I mean, this seems like, you know, I was interested in interviewing you and talking about this process and what you do because this seems like the future, isn't it? I mean, in other words, this is where we're moving towards as a society. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I was reading a book, Reality is Broken. I don't know if you've seen that, but it was about that, you know, we're all so involved in gaming on so many levels, from our phones to our computers to, you know, watches, tablets, that ultimately that is the way everything is going to have to be run because that's what gets our attention the most.
Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, gaming is so prevalent in our, you know, today's society and culture. It's, you know, it's very difficult to, you know, get away from it. But the thing is, the way I look at it is it's not something new. You know, playfulness, you know, and game-mindedness is something that is, you know, so ingrained in our culture. It's everywhere, but not until, you know, the advent of video gaming, it has such a, let's say, prevalent or, you know, so such a clear role. So there, I guess. What's interesting is that because of video games, this whole idea of playfulness and game thinking and so forth has really accelerated and has garnered a lot of attention from different domains, and people are trying to incorporate that into, you know, how we think, how we design new cities, or how we set up new services, how we work together. So that's the way I guess.
It's fascinating. What would be, can you give me, talk about, what's one of your favorite projects that you think was most successful?
The project that people know us, you know, know us from is the Chicken Run. And it's a project, it's an installation where we blew up these playground, let's say, toys, I guess. So they're like these spring chickens. These like these chickens on springs, these spring riders, and they are usually made for you know, small children, like I guess between the age of, I don't know, 3 to 5 or something. And one of the things that we wanted to do is, because we were working for a festival, is to sort of get this childhood experience and translate that into something, you know, people, you know, older or adults could actually experience anew. Feel that joy again.
Right.
So we just saw, yeah. So we make it bigger, and we plugged it in into a computer and made it into a race. So you got 3 of these chickens, and people are racing against one another by, you know, moving as fast as they can. And that installation has been, you know, in various festivals and business events and all kinds of events through Europe. So that was actually our most, let's say, visible and prominent.
Well, that one is the most, perhaps, I mean, for adults. And when we talk about changing the world, it can mean a variety of things. But in terms of this one, for the adult crowd, it's creating a very clear emotion, right? It's joy, it's playfulness, it's laughter, it's something very lacking self-consciousness, right? I mean, it's powerful.
Exactly.
in that sense.
Yeah, it follows the idea of, you know, playing is liberating yourself, right? Experiencing freedom. And one of the things that was so powerful about that installation is that we put it on a business event, you know, with people in suits. And in the moment when we put it there, and people were beginning to, you know, they were trying it out, immediately the space around it transformed into something else. For a moment, their whole context of doing business, being serious, was let go, and they experienced pure joy in for about 2 minutes. And that's great. I mean, and that's actually one of those powerful things that you can do with, you know, creating these playful interventions.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, in a sense, if this is how it applies in one of the most powerful ways, that clearly can change the world. That's a powerful transformative behavioral effect that it's having. It's actually causing change in people. This isn't cerebral, intellectual, or entirely aesthetic. It's a sense of
it's
interesting. It's everything. So comparing that project to others, I mean, as you said, there's a certain kind of freedom that you give yourself when doing that project and abandon. Other projects, you know, may not be so much like that. It would be hard, I think, to reproduce that with an actual video game or something. Or no, what are the mechanisms of that, and why is that one so successful? And can that be translated? I guess I'm asking a few questions, but why was that so successful in creating that kind of freedom, as you were saying, for yourself, if I'm quoting you right, as opposed to what can happen in a video game?
Well,
I mean, maybe can that happen in a video game? I don't know.
Of course. It only exists in a different space. The way, of course, the chickens work is because it's physical. It's really physical, and
right.
It plays into your, you know, your physicality, and so it's the exhilaration of movement, and you know, and also there's also a huge performative quality to it. So it creates an event and happening. But this can also happen within the space of video games. Less so, of course, with the physicality, but more so as a, within the game space itself. Especially with multiplayer games, you can see that, people create these, they come up with interesting events within the game to enhance their, let's say, enjoyment of the game itself. You know, it's the way they want to sort of engage or interact with the community, and they are being playful with one another. And then using the game as as a tool, as it were. So it can happen everywhere, but you know, it manifests itself in a different way. In even more serious contexts, for example, I just mentioned the project that I did for a building company. enjoyment is much more, or let's say abandon is much, much smaller, and it's more about agency and being able to express oneself within a particular kind of context and being able to, you know, being heard and being taken seriously. And that also creates a sort of a form of enjoyment or a form of, you know, freedom.
That's fascinating. So how will that be designed? Can you talk about that?
Well, in essence, it's all about meaningful play. So about being able to, you know, whatever you do within the, you know, within the context of the game, that has meaning. So when you talk about, you know, a serious contest like, you know, work, the things that have meaning are usually the things that are, let's say, defined. And they are very, let's say, formal. And especially when we're talking about safety in this case, it's the quality of work, which is sort of intangible. And it's always sort of policed. So there are safety inspections and people are reprimanded when they, you know, transgress or something. So, and I turned that around by creating a process where the people who were working could actually say, hey, guys, I think, or we think, that this is unsafe and we need to do something about it. And there's not, and it's not so much about blame, but more about, hey, we are aware. We can show you that we are aware, and we can also take steps. And so they did. So the moment that they, you know, could show it, so that they did that by taking pictures and putting them and putting on a sort of a presentation that was shown in the break rooms, they could actually, you know, transmit that whole, you know, the things that people saw, the things that they found important, and that was something that they can talk about and they could do something about it. So from there, people could autonomously do something about it. So people were actually solving problems, which usually were solved from the outside or through, you know, interventions. They could solve them themselves. And this created a huge difference in the way people were, you know, working and looking at, you know, the workspace and how they were interacting with one another.
It's fascinating. You know, really, it's much more than, of course, games where you're designing a kind of approach to lifestyle. Isn't that also partly correct? I mean, this feels to me like it should be, I should be incorporating or using different modes of your work to do everything all day long.
Well, yeah, in a sense, yeah, that's true. I mean,
you know, because we're talking about how much you know, joy should we have in our lives, or how much should we do these kind of things, or, you know, and it seems that you're so part of what your work perhaps is proposing is also something about lifestyle in general. Design.
Yeah, it's about actually the capacity to learn. You provide tools to let people, you know, grow and learn and discover things for themselves. I mean, the whole, you know, you don't stop learning when you're finished with school, right? I mean, it actually is the starting point to actually, you know, infinite possibilities. And one of the things that we sort of get into when you get older is that you actually want, you know, less change and things could keep the same, but the problem is, you know, reality keeps changing, keeps evolving, and especially in this day and age, society demands for you to adapt, to change. And by incorporating these playful, you know, principles, you allow people to be able to do that from, you know, from within, tapping into their own, you know, intrinsic motivations, their level of skill, and their you know, level of engagement, and then letting them, allowing them for to, you know, make it their own.
Right, and thus incorporate it into, you know, your life as you wish, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm educated as a video game designer. In a marketplace which is very small. I mean, in the Netherlands, gaming isn't—it's a growing industry, but it's not as, you know, well established as in the UK or in America. And when I graduated, it was I was sort of lost because I didn't want to go into the video gaming industry at that time because I felt it was too restricted. So I sort of, you know, created a space to be a game designer for, you know, for more than just video games. And it's something that, you know, wasn't there, but it is there now. So in a sense, I, you know, take my own, you know, the things that I make is also the thing, it's how I do my work. And that's actually what I love. I mean, it allows me to step in so many different domains, you know, from, you know, art to, you know, business, corporate structures, architecture, city planning, but also thinking education, you know, that's super interesting.
It allows you to move between so many spheres of thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I also do my practice now. I mean, I'm also part of a research group at the University of Applied Sciences in Amsterdam, and I'm part of a research group. It's called Play and Civic Media, and we actually research, you know, gaming and playfulness in this applied context, trying to think about how we can use that to create or actually help people become, empowered citizens who can actually be able to act and be aware of their own issues and be without actually depending too much on, you know, the municipal or the government.
You know, it's fascinating. It's you know, I mean, to take a step back a minute, when I look at other, thinking of other art forms, this one is one of the few that, you know, all artists want their work to actually change something, right? Change the way people think or act or are, and, you know, or cause a difference somehow, right? An emotion, something. And this work is, you know, maybe perhaps because of its educational bent, it must change. That is its goal, which is kind of extraordinary and unusual. It seems to me.
It is, but what is interesting? But that's actually so inherent on the medium, right? I mean, gaming, is all about behavior. What we do as designers, we actually try to design behavior. We want to sort of create artifacts to sort of invite people to interact with, and the interaction, and from there the interaction creates an experience, and that is what it's all about. And so the difference in this case is just you not only sort of, you know, perceive and reflect and that kind of stuff, but you also need to act, and therefore you sort of, by playing, you change already. You are doing something. And that's why it's so powerful.
Right. Yeah, fascinating. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. In looking over the course of what you've done in your career, from coming out of school till now, you've gone through a number of things to get here. You said you were designing video games, is that correct, for a while before you began working in a sense all these spheres?
Well, it's more I was educated to become a video game designer, and then because of the project, my graduation project that I did was sort of a locative game. I designed a game that was meant to be played in public spaces using smart objects. And this was just way before, you know, smartphones and so forth. So it was so totally new and experimental. And I thought, well, because I experienced from the project, I experienced how powerful gaming could be and how we could actually, you know, change ourselves and also our surroundings with. So, and I, you know, there aren't jobs that actually, you know, where you actually can do that. So first I did research. I was part of the research group at the University of Applied Science in Utrecht, and but then I was sort of, I got lost there because, you know, research is not really my thing. I love to do it, but writing and so forth, that's not my thing. I like to create stuff. And together with two other classmates, we, you know, founded Force Labs to design these cool installations, these playful installations. And we were initially meant to do, let's say, all these cultural projects, these art projects, creating these interactive installations. And gradually, over the years, because of the changing landscape, we moved into doing applied gaming, thinking about gaming, you know, for, you know, education and creating these educational games for museums and, in, you know, that kind of stuff. And now I'm focusing now on educational games. I'm now doing the project, which is for elementary school, and it's about teaching children the fundamentals of scientific thinking, and creating this hybrid game in a combination of a card game with a video game to sort of let the class be a small scientific community in itself.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so it's really broad what I've been doing for a while, and
now that you're at the point that you're at, in a way, what you're creating and what you do isn't it's a new niche, it's a new area. So I would imagine that people don't know all the things you can do. Obviously, they have to commission things. Is this?
Yeah.
I mean, it may not be this way anymore, but you have to ask. You have to propose things for commissions, or I'm sure people are coming to you now. But you know what I mean? It seems like something you have to create the audience as well, because people don't know that you exist in order to do this. So how do new companies or new places know to work with you?
It's word of mouth. Basically, because the Netherlands is pretty small, so people are really able to find you, and from there projects are started. And but it's also I do apply for projects, and I also pitch and
public projects. You mean?
So because, as you said before, there are not. It's not a obvious thing to, you know, commission such a project. So most of the time, you have to sort of create it yourself. So I do apply for grants. I also have tried to get investors, that kind of stuff. So, but it's difficult, because you always operating in someone else's domain, a different domain. It's not, you're not, you know, applying for a gaming project. You're applying for a project that sort of, in a way, is, kind of is an ICT project with gaming elements, something like that. So you have to really, talk the language and being able to be a chameleon and talk the lingo of the domain to get the project.
Tell me, Carol, what else are you working on at the moment?
The big thing that I'm working on now is a project called Unfake It. And ironically, it's a video game. It's an experiment in storytelling, and storytelling in combination with open world and player creation, player agency. And it's a sort of a role-playing game. And what usually is the case in role-playing games, that there's a predetermined plot and a predetermined story that you play for. You sort of reenact actually the story through gameplay. And what we wanted to do is that the story is emergent, and through player actions, you can actually change the shape of the world and how it behaves. So there's a huge simulative procedure-generated side to it. And we sort of developed it through, not only through, let's say, the hard technical stuff, but also through workshops. And it's sort of unique in this process that we sort of try to not come up with an answer for it so much as it is figuring out how you can think about storytelling, how you can think about interaction and player agency with storytelling, and how you can actually create a sort of a coherent world with it. And it's something that we are now working on and want to, we're looking for, a publisher so far to make it bigger and to get the real work done. And so that's something that's, on the agenda for the coming 6 months.
Well, that could be huge also, isn't it? That's something that could be a massive world, or, I mean, what are the limits to that? It seems that it could be huge.
Well, it's procedurally generated, and so it could be potentially huge. And one of the things that we're looking for is that we want players to collaborate. So we want to sort of look for opportunities for players to create this one big story world where, through play, people share their stories, but also their effects, and so that it actually affects your game world and see the deeds of other players, and then as part of their history. And it's pretty heavy technical achievement. So I've partnered with a company called Ludomotion, and so we sort of combining our creative efforts to, make this a reality.
So let me just rephrase this to see if I've understood it correctly. If players are changing other players' worlds, does that mean like how we actually affect other people's lives as it is in reality? I go to the store today, I do something, somebody says something nice to me, I help them, that change the world that day because that person would have gone in a different direction, something else would have happened. Is it that kind of metaphysical, or am I misunderstanding it?
Well, no, it's actually something akin to that. It's not, what you usually see with this, this type of games where we're talking about player-created content, it's actually about people creating objects, right? Making objects, designing objects, and putting it in the game world out there, and but in this case, it's about effect, exactly the way you sort of described it. Sometimes it could be direct, but most of the time it's part of the world's history. So, and the way we sort of frame it is we frame the whole game world in sort of a mythical age, so that you can get these stories that are akin to the the classical Greek myths or so. You can hear the stories of heroism of a player in a faraway land, or maybe not so far away, finding a relic, unleashing a mythical beast because of someone else's actions. So those are the opportunities we're looking for. Those are the interactions that we're looking for creating this kind of story world.
That's fascinating. Well, I look forward to hopefully seeing that one day.
Yeah.
Carol, thanks so much.
You're more than welcome.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.